If there's ever been a more obvious disparity between two positions, I'm not sure what it is. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy, and along with me today is our co-host, Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Well, as always, Barry, you know I like to be back here in the studio talking about these issues with you. We live in interesting times, and that old curse that we talked about a few weeks ago, may you live in interesting times. We're there.
Living in them.
I'm not sure who cursed us, but you made a statement, and I've heard this said before. The upcoming election is the most binary of binary choices possible.
It really is starting to develop that way.
And if people don't understand what that means is you've got essentially polar opposites. This is not a John McCain versus Barack Obama election or a Mitt Romney versus Barack Obama where essentially the choice is between the details of which kind of global socialism you're going to have.
That's right, which flavor of socialism you want to eat.
This is the exact opposite. This is dismantling of global socialism, and which is why you've got guys like John Kasich, Colin Powell, some former governors, some former senators, forming this, what is it, the Lincoln Project. The Lincoln Project is essentially a bunch of globalists who are angry that Donald Trump is attempting to reignite a feeling of national pride, because they were all set to mold us into a global governance. Yes, the United States would have hegemony, but we would be a global governance with the United States at the peak. But in order to get there, we were going to have to surrender a lot of our economic power to places like China and Mexico and third world nations.
And we'd have to let our social policy be directed by The Hague and by the United Nations. We would basically tell our citizenry that they would have to follow international law instead of following American law. There are a number of things that this group of ne'er-do-wells and backbenchers are really looking to. And I say backbenchers because let's just all be quite honest. John Kasich has always been a backbencher, Chuck. Even when he was governor, he was a backbencher. He didn't lead. He just threw temper tantrums and wanted his way all the time. And he has the audacity, which he continued to do during last week's Democrat National Convention, of throwing up the idea that he was like everybody's pastor or priest, and he would tell them what it would take to be saved, which is follow the book of Brother John.
Yeah, and in fact, he's out today essentially backpedaling on his wholehearted, full-throated endorsement of Biden. Why? Because Biden is praising rioters.
Yes, absolutely.
And Johnny and his pearl clutchers.
Yeah, his white bread establishment country club Republicanists.
The Mitt Romneys,
Jeff Flakes, Rob Portmans of the world.
The pearl clutchers, and if you don't know what that refers to, just think about it. An older lady who's seeing George Carlin on his comedy act for the first time, or maybe Eddie Murphy, and they'll sit there and they have pearls on and they clutch at them.
They hold them.
They
to
hold
protect
them as a form of sort of, oh my, this is awful. I think I should leave.
It's like a psychic comfort.
Yeah, exactly.
It's their security blanket. It just happens to be in the form of a pearl.
And the first time I saw that phrase, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's perfect.
Yes,
because I didn't make that up. Just so you know that I'm not all that clever. But I do recognize cleverness, and calling these guys pearl clutchers is honestly perfect.
It's a good analogy. Let's put it that way.
But
you know, like I said, you do have the Kasichs and others of the world, and let's just be quite honest, Chuck. you're looking at what they would call white bread, country club, establishment, WASP Republicans.
Yes.
Who now are realizing that the entire platform of the Democratic Party isn't about diversity and inclusion and tolerance. It's about replacing what they see as one hegemony with another hegemony. They believe that the white male culture is should be removed, replaced, and supplanted by whether it's the blacks, whether it's the Antifa socialists, whether it's the your Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's or your Rashida Tlaib's, whatever Muslim, Hispanic, whatever it might be, as long as they're progressive leftists and hate the basis of America, which is you hate God, you hate the family, you hate capitalism, and you certainly hate things like guns and conservatives. As long as you can check those boxes off, you're good. Now, if you look at Johnny Boy, since we're talking about Casey,
yeah,
let's go down through that list. Let's go backwards up that list. So does John hate guns? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
He pretends like he doesn't, but he does.
The architect of the 80s gun control laws,
yeah,
John Kasich.
The 96 semi-auto, yep, ban, the 95.
Yeah, 95, 96. Yeah, I said 80s. I meant 90s. Excuse me. So does he hate guns? Yes. Does he hate capitalism? Well, one only has to look at his run at governor, where he created the public-private partnership called Jobs Ohio, where he basically decided that private industry had to come and work alongside government in order to create this, well, neo-fascist entity that would pick winners and losers.
We need to clarify that.
Please, go ahead.
We're talking about free market capitalism.
Absolutely.
And remember that he worked for Bain Capital or somebody. He worked
Bain was Mitt Romney.
Mitt Romney, but Johnny had a job in one of these
Goldman Sachs.
These guys are not free market capitalists, they're crony capitalists. And
right,
by that we mean they are actually proponents of a fascist economy. That is, that the government itself creates government private partnerships. When you hear that phrase, you should run screaming from the room, because what it means is that the government is going to intercede for the economic needs of an elite few who provide money for things like campaigns and will provide jobs for their favorite politicians who get unelected. Those kinds of things. That's crony capitalism, and that's the kind of capitalist that guys like Mitt Romney, John Kasich.
So it's like when John Boehner left Congress, he went directly to K Street.
Exactly. And by K Street, again, we'll
unpack that a little bit.
Unpack that. K Street is the place where all the lobbyists have office in Washington, D.C. So he went right to a top dollar, top power lobbying firm on K Street. And that's what that means. And he didn't pass go. He did not collect $200. Well, he did collect $200. He collected a lot more than $200.
Well, yes.
He went right to this firm and makes way more money, at least legitimately, than he ever made as a legislator.
Right. So, you know, you have those situations. So you've got this group of people, and they're all... I don't know if Boehner's involved in it or not. I'd have to check on this. But the vast majority of them are circling around this thing called the Lincoln Project, okay? Well, the Lincoln Project is one piece of a larger set of pies. There's also other things that are going on, and you'll look at them. There's another... It's basically becoming a pack. It's called Republicans for Biden. And so this is the same group of ne'er-do-wells that are part of the Lincoln Project that are forming this. Now, it's funny, Chuck, because one of these super PACs that they're creating, this Republicans for Biden group, happened to have been helmed in Ohio by Matt Borges. And I don't know if folks, I know it's only been a couple, 3 weeks since we've talked about this.
Right.
But Matt Borges was one of the five who were indicted in the Larry Householder pay-to-play kickback scheme with the energy companies. So, and Borges actually was the one, and I think this is ironic, Chuck. It comes to find out Borges was the one who basically gave up the game by trying to recruit somebody who was a friend of his who turned on him. And I'm sure that Larry Householder and Neil Clark and Jeff Longstreth and some of the other guys who were indicted along with you know, Matt Borges, probably shouldn't be put in the same cell with Borges when they go to jail. because it was Borges's hubris and his willingness to try to corrupt somebody else into this this little scheme that caused this whole scheme to start unraveling and for the FBI to get a hold of the thread and pretty soon walk it all the way back till they could see what the pattern looked like and then make the arrests.
Well, at least they shouldn't be allowed to have a bar of soap and a towel in the prison shower.
We won't go there. This is a family show, Chuck.
Well, no, the bar of soap and a towel, if it was a weapon that got used against snitches.
That's right.
You'd wrap up the bar of soap in the towel, get the towel wet, and wrap up the bar of soap in it, and then you would beat the person with the bar of soap.
They often call those sock parties where they take their socks and they take the springs out of the beds.
Oh, yeah.
The bed frames, and use that to beat up an inmate that they don't like.
Or carve a shiv. I have a feeling these guys will not be in that kind of a prison.
Probably not at this point. No, they'll get the kind of... But going all the way back, the reason why John Kasich is now starting to do the duck walk backwards on Joe Biden, on his glowing endorsement of brother Joe Biden, is because he's realized that Biden and the entire Democratic Party want chaos. They want destruction. They want a civil war, Chuck. That's what they're looking to get done. And they want you and I to believe that the only way to stop that from happening is to elect them into office and give them the power. I got news for our listeners and anybody else who happened maybe not to be paying attention. If Joe Biden becomes president, Chuck, what is your odds that you would give on the riots and the protests tamping down and disappearing?
It's not going to happen.
Yeah, those are the same odds I would give as well.
There's a 0% chance.
What's going to happen is that they're going to realize that the Democratic Party and the establishment Democrats, which is what Joe's part of and really what Kamala Harris is really part of, while they're singing their praises of the protesters, they will have a lot on their hands if they win office, because these protesters are not going to stop. They're not going to slow down. Chuck, you know, we were coming today to come here to your studio, and we stopped to grab a quick bite to eat, and of course they had the TVs blaring. Thank God it wasn't on CNN, but it was on something much worse today. ESPN.
Oh God.
All it was a constant barrage of all of these multimillionaire basketball players in the NBA moaning and groaning about things like, you know, how unjust and unfair things are and how, you know, they're disadvantaged. And I'm stopping to myself. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Wait just a minute, okay? I appreciate that the history of this country has been such that we have been uncharitable toward each other on the basis of skin color.
Yeah.
On the basis of ethnicity. On many bases. I mean, we're even uncharitable. I'll wear it. I'm even uncharitable to people based on their political affiliations.
Yeah.
But I am. Okay. I get that. But what I have to ask all of these multimillionaire, successful, famous basketball players who, can I remind you folks, basketball is a cottage industry that only benefits a small handful of people, including promoters, their handlers, the apparel companies, the sporting good companies, and the TV networks that pay for or get advertising paid for because of a game. They're not solving any world problems playing a game. As much as you liked the Dream Team in 92, as much as you thought that maybe oh gosh, why am I drawing a name blank on the guy? He's the crazy one with the fun, with the weird hair.
Oh,
he's
Dennis Rodman.
Dennis Rodman, that's it. Now, as much as you know, Dennis Rodman going to North Korea and hanging out with his buddy Kim Jong-un was a great idea toward world peace, I'm not seeing it. But what we're hearing out of many of these basketball players and coaches and owners is this whole idea that the world will just be better if we get rid of three things: Trump, the police, and the rule of law. Because that's what they're really getting down
that's
to.
That's the bottom line.
That's the bottom line. So, honestly, big news today was, oh, the NBA Players Association decided they'll go ahead and continue to have the playoffs. My response? Big deal.
Well, my response
was, who cares?
My response was, you mean the playoffs are on?
Well, I'm looking at it like, oh, so maybe they'll get this pain over with sooner rather than later?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's like, honestly, I don't understand. I do understand. Let me take that back. I understand because we have a culture that is dedicated to their entertainment.
Yeah.
We have a culture that's dedicated to escapism and not taking responsibility for their own actions.
Yeah.
And so, and as I mentioned before, I think on another program, and I know I've talked to you about this privately, this whole deal with Corona basically setting off everything, setting everything aside, shutting everything down, creating new ways of doing things. So, you know, like baseball, you know, if somebody gets the sniffles, all of a sudden we're canceling five games because, you know, oh, Corona. NBA now, the whole, frankly, I don't care if the NBA, the Major League Baseball, the NFL, and college basketball all dry up and disappear. Yes, and college football, too. I know I'm going to get hate mail for that one, but I don't care.
Sorry, folks.
Because, frankly, yeah, they're all idols that we've put before God. People care more about what happens to the Ohio State University and who's the coach and who's the quarterback than they care about helping their fellow in need in their own communities. How about on a Saturday, instead of sitting, plopping your butt down in front of a television for 3.5 hours to watch a game that means nothing, but that you put so much reverential worship focus on, that you go out and maybe help a neighbor fix their garage, or go down the street and find out if the old lady who lives four houses away needs groceries, or check to see that the kids playing in the back lot in the neighborhood are safe and there's no drug dealers or gangbangers around looking to cause harm. Get away from the tube. Get involved in the community.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm serious. I'm dead serious. Okay? And I don't care if people who are hearing us don't like it or do like it. If you do like it, that's great. If you don't like it, I frankly could care less. The point is the reality is we as a culture have been turned into idol worshipers. We worship entertainment. Everybody upset because you can't go to a movie? We worship sport. Oh, the howls and the cries when Ohio State decided they weren't going to have football this year. Oh, we can't have that. You know, we worship our convenience. How many people are moaning and groaning because, oh, I haven't been able to go out to a restaurant and eat?
Yeah.
Have you been able to buy groceries? Do you have a stove in your house? Do you have a refrigerator? Those are really the constituent elements of what you need. And honestly, even if you didn't have that, you could go to some other level of, you know, being able to make food. If you had a microwave in your house, you could make food. I mean, come on. But we've whined and complained about all this stuff. And I sit here and look at it, and I'll be the first one to say I didn't like some of the inconveniences that all this stuff has caused.
Right.
And I do believe that the governor and his flunkies making these decisions were making very, very poor decisions, and decisions that don't have a constitutional basis and that are actually an affront to a free society. But I think God's still using it all to slap us awake.
Oh,
to
yeah.
Say,
I think
to
so.
Say, guys, all this stuff can go away like that. All it takes is a little bug, a few microns in diameter.
Less than a few microns.
Less than a few microns in diameter.
Fraction of a micron.
Your entire fabric of your society can be unraveled with a few microns in the right person. The reason why we're having all these protests and riots, Chuck, supposedly stems from the igniting point was George Floyd's death in Minneapolis, right? Now it's coming to find out when you start looking at the autopsy reports and everything, George Floyd couldn't breathe because he had COVID.
He was recovering from COVID.
He was recovering from COVID, and he was having trouble still breathing because he had also taken a lot of fentanyl-laced drugs.
Methamphetamine.
Meth before the interaction with the police.
He took a fatal dose of fentanyl. That's the bottom line.
That's what was causing him not to be able to breathe. It wasn't the cop applying a hold that police are trained to do why they're trained to do it that way is to make sure that they don't obstruct the breathing of a suspect while they have him on the ground. That came out too. But God took that little bug, put it in the right person, in the right situation, and what do we have? We have the unraveling of many of our cities. Portland, Seattle, Minneapolis, now Kenosha, Wisconsin, downtown Columbus. Folks, if what we've built is so fragile and so tenuous that a virus can knock it out, maybe we built the wrong things.
Yes.
Maybe we built our security on the wrong foundations. Maybe our hope has been placed in things and people when it should have been placed in the object of all of our hope and our faith, which is Christ Jesus. I'd see, Chuck, that if we don't wake up and learn this lesson fairly quickly, God may have to get a little louder on his megaphone.
Well, he's speaking to some of these people, like in the Lincoln Project. I mean, one of the reasons that Johnny Kay is suddenly in backtrack mode, he's looking at what he's thrown his lot in with, as we mentioned. He's looking at it, and what he's seeing is, oh my gosh, this is going nowhere 150 miles an hour, and I have basically traded in my political career to attempt to make a point, and the point is passing me by. So he's looking at this and saying, okay, I've got to do something to salvage what I had built up to this point. And the fact is that I'm going to go to the Bible for a minute. James 1:8.
Okay.
A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. Johnny Kay is deeply unstable at this point because he saw nothing but rainbows and unicorns and Joe Biden, and now that the mask is off, he sees Satan.
Well, I'm just going to say that I think it may have been a little bit more than that.
I'm sure it was.
I think that John Kasich's fantasy world that he created for himself, with this whole idea, crumbled around his ears over the weekend. Because, as you know, last week Kasich went out there, did his little address to the Democrat convention, not to the Republican. Remember, he skipped the Republican convention in 2016 because he was mad at Trump and he was jealous because Trump took the nomination that John Kasich believed he owned and it was due to him. So he took his ball and he went and played somewhere else during the convention. This year, 4 years later, John hasn't learned, matured, or grown.
No.
He's continued to be the same jealous, resentful, vengeful, immature politician that he's proved himself to be. And so then he goes and he supports Joe Biden. The one thing I don't think he counted on, or that he didn't put into his calculations, that hit him over the weekend: the Ohio Republican Party has now made John Kasich enemy number one. They're attacking him all over the media.
That wasn't supposed to happen.
Wasn't supposed to happen. But Jane Temkin and the Republican Party realize that Donald Trump is going to win re-election, especially probably going to win Ohio and definitely going to win a re-election. And that the party, because of the number of other body blows they've taken recently with the householder situation, had better be on the right side of something. And honestly, I think seriously that a lot of people probably made some phone calls to Jane Temkin and said, you need to exercise some party discipline on John Kasich. This is ridiculous. And sure enough, what happened? He's being branded with the word traitor.
Oh, yeah.
And they're going out there in media. Folks, pick up. If you go around and like social media and things, you'll see it. Trust me, you'll see it. They're spending money to posterize John Kasich. He didn't think that would happen.
No, he sure didn't. He thought he had built an unconquerable empire.
Well, I got just like we thought in society that we'd built something that a microbe couldn't take down in the right place.
Yeah.
John Kasich was building something in his own fevered imagination that, well, he miscalculated.
Let's just say
seriously miscalculated.
He built a ship that couldn't be sunk.
That's right. It was like the Titanic.
He
made
the
claim,
Titanic.
God can't even sink this.
Not even God could sink this ship. Yeah.
Well, okay.
Guess what? And right now he's finding himself a bow down, taking on water fast.
I would say he's probably bailing at the speed of light. If he's going to ever get out from under this.
Well, the fact is that he skipped two Republican conventions in a row. This is a governor of a Midwestern state that's a key state, and he's now skipped two Republican conventions in a row. Folks, a convention is the highest rulemaking body in any organization. It's the place where the rules get set up for the next election for the next convention, essentially.
That's right.
Although the delegates always are in charge of the standing rules, you're still under those rules until the next convention. So he skipped two of those now, which means that guys like him, and not just him, I don't want to focus on him too much, but guys like him who are doing this are basically in severe danger of making themselves completely irrelevant.
Oh, absolutely. And honestly, you can happen to a nicer guy. But be that as it may, you know, I think another thing that Kasich may have come, and maybe I'm giving him too much credit.
It's possible.
Here. It's possible. I may be giving him too much credit on this one. He may have actually come to realize that when Joe Biden was talking about that this is a battle between light and darkness, that he was actually standing on the dark side.
Oh, yeah.
Because those of our listeners who have been paying any attention whatsoever this week, we have another little convention that's happening this week, and that's the Republican National Convention. And Chuck, as we mentioned at the top of the hour, you can't get much more of a black and white, yin and yang, light and dark differential than between the outlook and the tone in the Democrat convention and its speakers and its nominee, and the Republican National Convention and their speakers and their nominee. There's a complete gulf between those two.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what we said, the most binary of binary choices.
And I think it's very interesting that the Democrats seem to think they're on the side of light and good, and that Trump and the Republicans are on the side of evil. But you know what the funny thing is I'm not hearing that same theme from the Republicans. Because in order to follow that kind of theme, and where they would, you know, 180 degree flip that and say we're on the side of light and good and the Democrats are all on the side of evil and darkness, they would be exercising something that the Democrats are exercising right now that they're actually repudiating during their convention, which is the idea of the politics of division. If you listen to the Republican messages, basically what they're saying is, we want America as a country to be better, to be greater, to take the next steps. They're not leaving out Democrats. They're not leaving out African Americans. They're not leaving out even social justice warrior, silver spoon, college brat students who want to wear masks and hit people with chains.
That's right.
They may have a place for them in a jail, but okay.
Well, they're definitely not leaving them out. But let's talk about this for a second, because remember the couple in St. Louis who basically got in trouble for coming out of their home to defend it against violent rioters who had already torn down a gate to access the front yard, the side, front and side yard of these people.
Oh, you mean Bonnie and Clyde, who were actually out there threatening peaceful protesters.
McCloskeys, I believe, is their name. Yeah. And who were, in fact, game players in the St. Louis area, both politically connected, both, I don't know their political affiliation. I'm assuming that they were at least quasi-Democratic Party, because in that part of Missouri, if you aren't a Democrat, you don't get a job in government, essentially.
Sure, yeah, no.
Who came out full-throated in favor of Donald Trump and said, I watched part of an excerpt from a speech in which they basically said, hey, this could happen to you. We live out in the burbs St. Louis is not necessarily a nice place in a lot of places, and I can testify.
Oh yeah, I've been to St. Louis a dozen times, and yeah, there are places that you don't want to go.
You don't want to be there. So they said the same things could happen to you. Prosecutors who basically come in, ignore the law, confiscate your weapons, doctor the weapons, the ones that weren't working, to make them work, and then charging us with a felony for using supposedly a deadly firearm that basically at the time was only good more or less as a hammer.
Yeah, it probably wouldn't have been very good at that.
No,
either.
It would have been a terrible hammer. You might have been able to club someone who was coming up to you to stab you in the head with it. Maybe. Pistols aren't really designed for that. But the fact is that they said, okay, we need a Donald Trump to stop this. And they made the point that the Marxists who led the mob in the protests that came after our arrest came to our house, stood in our front yard with a bullhorn and said, you can't stop the revolution. Just won the Democratic primary for Congress in District 1 of Missouri,
right,
and they made the point, this is tantamount to being elected to office.
Oh yeah, because it's heavily Democrat.
This Marxist rioter, this anarchist, will be serving in Congress. Will be hooked up with AOC and Tlaib and
Ayanna Presley and Ilhan Omar, and yeah,
and they'll be hooked up with the squad. Now, you and I, if you go back in our archives, you can find it. I'm not going to dig it out. we've discussed this on many occasions. You don't need to have all of Congress to have an effective bloc. You need to have about 20 to 30,
yeah,
35 members.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
And you have an effective negotiating bloc of
Ask John Boehner how big the Freedom Caucus was.
That's right.
About the time it hit 35 to 40 members, that's when he started having trouble.
He had major trouble, which is why he quit.
Yeah. Exactly.
He was no longer going to be able to push the globalist, crony capitalist agenda with great ease. He was going to have trouble from these guys, and they were going to act as power brokers, and that's exactly what the squad is setting up to do. So these people were embraced. They weren't made fun of. There are a number of people who've come in, who okay. Think before you speak there, Charles, who have come into the Republican fold from being on the fringes of the Democratic, being on the what I would call the, and I haven't made this up, but what I would call the Democratic plantation. They vote that way because that's the way they've always voted. Their grandma voted that way. Their mom and dad voted that way. And that's the way they're going to vote. And they're looking at it and saying, we can't take this anymore. This is not the same party that it was,
I understand that.
20 years ago. It's not.
Well, and you got guys like Pete Buttigieg who are out there now blaming, the whole thing with Kenosha coming up. Well, this will keep going if we reelect Trump to office. It won't stop. okay, I want to stop people like him and others right in their tracks and say, okay, so then please can you explain to me why in these cities where Democrats are in control, you're not stopping it? If all of a sudden I'm supposed to believe that putting Democrats in control in D.C. somehow is going to magically stop all of the riots and the destruction and the arsons and the shootings and the stabbings that are going on right now. They're not backing their claims. They're basing it on a fantasy, Chuck. Oh, if we just get rid of this one guy, then everything will be better. No, it won't. Because you let a genie out of the bottle that you can't put back in.
That's right.
This is a genie of selfishness, anger, bitterness, driven by a socialist mindset of everybody owes me something. And you've given it free rein in major cities. It is an absolute national embarrassment that whatever you want to call it, Chuck, Chud, Chod, Chitty Chod,
Chitty Chitty Bang,
whatever
bang.
The, yeah. Whatever in the world that is out there in Portland, hasn't been completely dismantled by now by bringing in the National Guard or the police and arresting people for trespassing, loitering, vandalism, property damage.
Yeah.
The list can go on and on and on.
Let me give you, you brought up something that's a prime example.
Sure.
The governor of South Dakota.
Okay. Kristi Noem.
Kristi Noem.
Mm-hmm. Gave a great speech last night, by the way.
Yes. But MSNBC cut away from it to do a quote-unquote fact check.
Of course they did.
Now,
why? Because hers is the only state in the union that didn't shut down at all during COVID.
Well, she also talked about, that wasn't what the subject was, although I'm sure
right,
they
no,
did
but that's part of it.
It was her gun control statements. That they're absolutely necessary for self-defense.
Right.
Now, how did MSNBC counter this? They broke in to have this big counter statement. We just have to break in. And it was Rachel Maddow, who my daughter calls Richard Madcow.
Okay.
Who's, I'm like, yeah, okay, I like that, Richard Madcow. No, they brought in who to do the counterpoint? Jenny Durkin, who is the mayor of Seattle.
Right.
She was going to explain why guns are bad. And that they have no effect whatsoever on crime. The private ownership of weapons will have and it's good that all this crime and things is going on because people just don't understand why it's going on. No, I think we understand that very well. But I mean, talk about a reality check fail. Bringing on the mayor of Seattle who has done nothing. How many days in a row now? Like 90 that they've had rioting in the streets in Seattle?
Well, I mean, you're right. That's what I'm saying. It's Seattle, Portland, you name it. Pete Buttigieg just needs to sit down and shut up because it's like, if you're making this claim that somehow if we get rid of Donald Trump, then all of a sudden there'll be peace in the cities again, then tell me how come the Democrats haven't been able to deliver that already?
Folks, this is... Look, I'm going to make a historical reference, and a lot of people are going to go, oh, okay, whatever, dude. and that is, this is the way the French Revolution was fought. Key cities, out in the countryside where you live and I live, and, you know, I'm 35 miles outside of downtown Columbus. Did we have protests here? Yeah, you know what it consisted of? People standing out on the courthouse steps waving placards and that kind of stuff. Although our friends in Lancaster are telling us they show up every Wednesday to try to come and tear down the statue of William T. Sherman. And they're not allowed. Who doesn't allow it? The sheriff, Dave Phelan's like, not here. You might get away with that in Columbus. You're not doing that here. And the armed citizens of Lancaster. This is the difference. But the fact is, the French Revolution was fought in the cities, and the people in the countryside essentially didn't know what was going on because life went on just like it had before.
That's right.
And all of a sudden, what do they find out? Well, somebody comes in to confiscate their harvest. Why? Because the in the case of, to quote The Who, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. Yeah, except worse. And if you don't know the song, Don't Get Fooled Again.
That's right.
And which is a very interesting song. If you listen to the words all the way through, they're basically saying, you're kind of wasting your time
you're
on this
your
stuff.
Time.
Yeah,
right.
Because
that's
the people, the people in the movement are just as bad as the people they're trying to replace.
Well, and that's kind of where it's getting down to. If you think about this whole thing with BLM and Antifa, they want social justice. But to them, justice means we get to abuse and harm and violate the people we want to, where we're claiming that we're, all of us have been subjected to that. And if you go around and you look at the average Antifa member, they're well-to-do liberal college students.
They're trust fund babies.
They're trust fund babies. They've never had a single interaction with a police officer up to the point that they slapped on black, grabbed a bike chain, and then tried to make their point by abusing somebody else.
Have you ever read any of David Horowitz's books?
Oh, yeah.
David Horowitz was a red diaper, trust fund, essentially Marxist.
Communist, yeah.
Who suddenly came to the realization in the late 70s and early 80s that he'd been scammed.
Yeah.
And in fact, I wouldn't say that David Horowitz suddenly came over and became a rock-ribbed Republican, Republican conservative stalwart, but he is a very decent thinker.
Yes, he is.
And I read his book, what was the name of it? Something Generation. Oh, gosh. I've still got it. I thumb it every once in a while. But it's brilliant. It really is. And he says how I came to have a meeting with Ronald Reagan and understand what he was trying to do.
Yeah, so we'll put a link up on theprinciplepolicy.com for that book. Yeah, because the one that I like is a little pamphlet of his. It's called The Art of Political War.
Yeah.
It's a very, very good read. Yeah. I would suggest that people get it.
But this is what we might see, but it's not going to happen instantly. I mean, David Horowitz was involved from way early in the 60s.
Right.
And all of a sudden, it took him 20 years, and he's like, what have I done?
Yeah, you have that epiphany of, oh, that's what this is all about. And that's going to happen. You know, as I was mentioning a little bit earlier, I want to kind of segue back. This whole idea of how the Democrats set up this theme that there's light and darkness, you know,
right,
and that
right.
they're the light and that Donald Trump's dark. Well, that's fine and well, and we've seen that kind of be dispelled by what the Republicans have done. I mean, everything from a naturalization ceremony to, and Chuck, this is where. If the Democrats want to start talking about who's light and who's dark, I got to point to them that their party platform basically shows that they're as dark as it gets because they're in favor of abortion on demand. The Republican Party, for the, might I say, the first time in the history of the conventions, did something during this convention under Donald Trump's leadership that you didn't have under Mitt Romney, you didn't have under John McCain, you didn't have under George Bush, you didn't have under Ronald Reagan, you didn't have under Bush Sr. Matter of fact, you haven't seen it. What did they have? Not one, but two keynote addresses from pro-life activists and leaders.
Yeah.
About the issue of abortion. Chuck, it's a first. And you and I have always said this, that when everybody, and this, okay, there's another first. And I think this one's actually just, it's linked to that first. But it's probably more vitally important that nobody's paying any attention to. 2020 marks the first Republican convention in my lifetime that I know of that we didn't have a fight over what the platform was going to say.
On the life subject.
On any subject, on family, on any type of thing.
Free trade versus, yeah.
Did you hear anything about anybody talking about a platform committee and platform issues and whether they did it virtually or did it in person? There was no debate or discussion about the platform.
No, because we're all the globalists.
They're hooked up with Biden and the Democrats.
Or they're hooked up with the Lincoln Project.
Yeah, exactly, which is hooked up with Biden and the Democrats. Yeah. But that's okay. But that's the whole point, Chuck. And folks, I wanted to, for those of you who pay any kind of attention politically, let that sink in. This is the first presidential election cycle in my memory, and I'm 50-plus years old, so I go back a little ways. This is the first one in my memory, Chuck, where we've not had a platform debate. We've not had rewriting of the party platform. We've not had wrangling and debate and duplicitousness, as we heard from a number of people who were members of previous platform committees about how they were tricked in, you know, they'd tell them to, they'd stick them on the bus and they'd make them run around while they were doing platform stuff, or they would tell them they were going to be in one location and they are actually in another. I mean, you've heard all these stories.
Yeah.
Morton Blackwell is, you know, if you ever read any of Morton Blackwell stuff, I mean, he laid this out full well, and this was under Reagan, where the liberal establishment who controlled the platform committees basically were trying to jam in things like gay rights and abortion, and okaying on abortion, and this command control economy stuff with public-private partnership.
Yeah.
Didn't happen this one. We never had a peep about a debate, about a platform, about having to approve a new platform, because the platform that Donald Trump got in place in the 2016 election, he's still abiding by. It's part of his promise to the American people that he hasn't completed yet, and he knows it. I think that's fairly significant, and if people who are, you know, who listen to us are politically minded, that's probably one of the biggest accomplishments that I've seen a president be able to make that nobody knows about.
Just think about it. The reason that Trump hasn't been able to get a number of the things done that he promised, and it looked like he was going to get, is because of Lincoln Project Republicans and those who are secretly with the Lincoln Project Republicans, but know it's political suicide.
For them to stick their neck out.
Yeah. Mitch McConnell.
You can go down the list. Yeah.
Yeah. Rob Portman.
Well, you know, you got the Lincoln Chafees of the world. You've got the Susan Collinses. You've got the Olympia Snows. You got the Lisa Murkowskis. The list goes on and on and on of these. You got the former Senator Jeff Flake and Jim Colby in Arizona, because they've jumped right onto the Republicans for Biden thing. You've got all these guys. But, you know, since we swing back around to our own, love him or hate him, we still have to claim him, John Kasich. That was one thing that Johnny was notorious for, Chuck. I can't be held to the platform.
Right.
That when John Kasich was governor in Ohio and Matt Borges was his hand-picked executive director, the head of the Ohio Republican Party, what was the one thing they refused to do? They refused to adopt the Republican platform.
That's it.
For the entire 8 years John Kasich was governor.
Why? The pro-life plank was one of the big, huge reasons.
The pro-life and the pro-family planks, pro-marriage plank in the platform, they didn't want to be tied to it. They didn't want their candidates to have to be tied to the platform. Why? Because the platform represents a promise from the party to the American people of what they will do when they achieve office in order to meet those goals. And in your and my lifetime, Chuck, no other Republican politician other than Donald Trump has ever taken it seriously. But he took it seriously. That's why everybody was shocked and aghast that during the first 3 years of his presidency, the list of accomplishments of kept promises that he made in 2016 to be elected that have actually been completed and fulfilled is 6.5 pages long.
Yeah.
Why? Because he actually believes the platform is a charter with the American people.
Yeah, it's a contract. I mean,
it's a contract.
It's a contract.
Yeah.
Now, if you'll remember, Newt Gingrich had that whole contract with America business, and what did the left call it?
The contract on America.
On America, yeah, the contract on America. But nobody viewed that as a contract in reality.
No. Because they knew that that side wasn't intent on actually fulfilling the terms of the contract.
Right. Newt Gingrich, I think he realizes at this point that, gosh, I wish we'd actually stuck with the thing.
Well, think about it, Chuck. This is the way that contract works. There are two sides. Okay, so in any contract, you have two parties. So the parties were the voters and the Republican politicians.
Yeah.
Okay? The Republican politicians promised, you vote for us and we'll put all these things in place. So the American people fulfilled their end of the contract and they voted Republicans into the majority. What did those Republican politicians do after that? Did they fulfill their end of the contract?
Crawfished.
Oh, no. It's like, well, no, you see, that was written with invisible ink, and, well, that word doesn't mean what it says, and what is the definition of is anyway?
That's,
I know,
right.
That's Clinton, but still.
Yeah.
But the point is that they basically figured out all the excuses why they couldn't uphold their end of the contract after the other party had fulfilled their terms of the contract by voting them into office. Chuck, Donald Trump asked the American people to vote him into office in 2016, and he'd fulfill the terms of the contract and do X, Y, and Z. The American people, whether you believe in the outcome of the count or not, Hillary Clinton, the American people fulfilled their end of the promise. Their part of the contract, they delivered by putting Donald Trump into office. So did he crawfish?
No.
Not in the least. As a matter of fact, again, right now, there is 6.5 pages. There's a document, and it's single-space type. It's 6.5 pages of bullet points of all of the promises that Donald Trump has kept, all of the policy commitments he made that have been fulfilled, all of the accomplishments of that administration. And Chuck, if I had to go back and look at George W. Bush, or I had to go back and look at Ronald Reagan, or George H.W. Bush, or Richard Nixon, for that matter, or Gerald Ford, and I was going to write a paper of bullet points of all the accomplishments they made that they promised to get elected. Well, you see, I'm holding a piece of paper up to you. It's got a lot of writing on the front, right?
Yeah.
Let me show you what it's going to look like when I write them out. It's a blank piece of paper.
They'd be able to find about maybe a page full of bullet point, a double spaced,
maybe
double spaced, bullet pointed.
But then there'd have to be a codicil with each one that the actual promise was this, and this is how they fulfilled it.
Yeah, and that's exactly what you'd get. Now, you want to know how? I'll be quite honest. It's very clear that the Republicans and Donald Trump in the lead plane are over the target. Because the flak is tremendous.
The flak is engulfing some of our cities.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
And basically what's happening is they're so busy saying, he didn't fulfill this promise, he didn't fulfill this promise, he didn't fulfill this promise. He lied about this, he lied about that. When you look at the lie, there's no lie involved. What there is he didn't get as much done as he tried to get done, and who stood in his way?
Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer.
Not just them.
And
but
Mitch McConnell.
If you'll recall, he had a Republican Congress the first 2 years. He had both houses.
Yeah, he did. He had John Boehner as Speaker of the House.
Exactly. And what did they do? They opposed him at every turn.
Again, this gets back around to Boehner and Kasich and others like Jeff Flake, who was there, Jim Colby, who was there for a little bit of time. I think Jim had left by the time 2016 rolled around. But all of these former officials, whether administration officials in the Bush administration or whatever have you, and people now, like, you know, you've got John McCain's widow is one of the Lincoln Project people who are Republicans for Biden.
Liz Cheney.
Liz Cheney, the daughter of Dick Cheney. You've got all of these people, Chuck, who are upset because Trump has done two things that they cannot stomach. He keeps his promises to the American people, not to the political elite. And he does what he says he's going to do. And he's changed the game. And that's the thing that he can't stand.
Yeah.
He has changed the political game in Washington, D.C.
Which drives the politicians nuts.
Absolutely freaks them out. They want it. They want status quo ante. They want the antebellum Washington, D.C. And I'm using that term as loaded as it sounds.
Yes, I get what you're saying.
They want the American people to remain in slavery to their political betters. Donald Trump is breaking the shackles and saying, you're actually the ones who are telling us what to do, not the other way around.
Right. And that is the beauty of it, which is why I was not a believer in 2016, and I have become a... I'm not kidding myself that Donald Trump is some kind of a second coming, because he's not. He's got issues. I mean, his Twitter feed is a little, you know...
I honestly don't care about his Twitter feed, because I get what he's doing.
So do I.
He's playing rope-a-dope, and that's fine. Let him play rope-a-dope. I have some concerns over his softness toward the homosexual rights issue. Okay? I have some concerns over some of his on-again, off-again trade practices.
Right.
I have a few concerns over whether or not he is developing the next generation, because as much as people love Mike Pence... Mike Pence is still deeply marinated in old line antebellum Republicanism. And I'm hoping that his exposure to Donald Trump, hopefully for another 4 years in office, will help him to find the intestinal fortitude that it's going to have to take to fill the shoes of number 45.
I'm going to say right out front that Mike Pence has proven himself, while he was in office in Indiana, he was an evangelifish.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the spine would soften the minute he got pressure.
And it did. And it did on a number of issues.
Yeah. Especially turning a Defense of Marriage Act into a
capitulation to the homosexual left.
Yeah.
Yes.
Completely made it its 180 degree opposite. So, you know, if he's the heir apparent, I'll be quite honest, he's approximately as charismatic as a mud fence.
Well, but we'll see come in 4 years, because there are an awful lot of people who were up on that stage this week, from Nikki Haley to Jim Jordan, to even Herschel Walker and to some others.
That's right.
Who probably are going to take the example that Donald Trump did in 2015 and 2016, and maybe looking at that in 2024 and 2025.
Yeah, well, we've basically Donald Trump proves that you don't have to be a career politician to run for president.
Ooh, absolutely.
But you do have to have some experience on how to get things done, and how to use the knowledge you've gained in corporate America to turn it around into the government arena.
That's right.
And part of the deal, his deal, is knowing which people to hire and who not to hire, or who to fire when it becomes necessary. Because, you know, they talk about, he's had this this merry-go-round
of
the revolving door, and I'm like, you know what? A CEO works until he finds the people that do the job.
That's right, and then and that door keeps spinning until they get the right people in there,
and that's
just the way it works.
And that's the problem with this idea that somehow we need career politicians in there who will run. He does allow people to run their departments, but right. He's like, you're going to do it within my parameters.
And that's the way it should be.
And that's the way it ought to be. That's the way a president's cabinet is supposed to. Not that you put people into place and then let them run roughshod.
No, he puts them in. He says, we need to run it in these parameters because we have a responsibility to these people over here to do it right.
Especially in the State Department.
Unlike, I'll put whoever in here, let them run it all the way they want to, and then I'll come out and tell you why you should accept it.
Yeah.
See, it's a different mindset.
Yeah.
And folks, it's a mindset we need for the next 4 years, so we need to seriously think about how we vote this year.
That's right. Please keep that in mind when you're considering who to vote for. We're out of time. You know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com, and join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.